Mr. Hay, Reel 4. Now, these officers, they seem to have been, they've presumably been keen enough in the First World War. What had caused them to be now a bit apathetic or uninterested?
Well, they were on the reserve officers. Their time hadn't run out, and they were recalled. Some of them were really elderly for having a part in the battalion duties. And they realised, of course, that they knew nothing about modern weaponry. And they were really just office boys. The nice chaps and very quite pleased to think we're doing some forces, but they realised that they weren't doing very much.
And you were with headquarters company, were you?
I think ours. We were all just not allotted to anybody particular jobs.
What would you do on your trips round all these detachments? Presumably they were old soldiers as well, the detachments you were visiting.
Yes, well, the first one I went to was Osworth Aerodrome, where we had a detachment. Osworth Aerodrome was operational. They had a territorial unit there, which had, in view of the shortage of fighters down south, they had moved out. We were training planes there, but of course at that stage in the war they didn't have the Royal Air Force regiment, so we went to have. I went down, it was very nice to get nice digs with the Air Force. Great fun. The soldiers were in tents and to conceal them. From the air, they had been put in a wood so that they weren't an obvious target, and I used to go down to see that they were all right, did their guard duties, patrolling and so on. And one day, a young man said, "Have you been on flight?" I said, "No." He said, "You don't like flight." So he took me up and we went round and I said, "Oh, I would just like to see what it looks like from the air. Of course, if it's going to be attacked, it's going to be from the air." And I saw where our soldiers were, well, it's all wood, there weren't many woods. And out of the other end of the woods, there were aircraft wings sticking out. Aircraft wings aren't very well camouflaged. When I got back, I said to the station protection, what it was, protection, I said, "Those aircraft aren't very well camouflaged." I said, "I've had a look at them from the air." I said, "You know, we'll be in the military college." He said, "They're meant to be the dummies." Here we are, men. Sleeping. So, anyhow, we can rectify that.
You were sleeping right close to them.
Yes.
What other trips did you make?
Well, I used to go on a Thursday down to Cliffield Aerodrome, one of the other big ones, to see that there were officers with them. But I had to see that the wages were paid, many complaints and so on. And then, as officers became due for a period of leave, I went and stood in for them. It was an experience with these old boys.
How did you get on with them? Because
fine, I knew that their type, and, you know, but having been brought up with all this strict training, particularly with the artist rifles, where your time was awry or something, all right, they were doing a job. And we had I moved to the gates at a place called Drill Hall, and I had my own apartment there, so that was...
Within the Drill Hall?
Yes, the new Drill Hall. They just lived up by in one of the married quarters. So that was fine, and they got another officer posted to him, who one disposal expert. He was regular Royal Engineers, and he had a squad, and of course bombs were dropping. And we, actually younger man, we got on, we were together. And he said, well, I knew where I came from. He said, I put a bomb down the Royal Engineers' boots. Would you like to come and see it? So I looked down, and he took me down where this bomb was ticking. Ultimately, his men were working on it, but it got out. So when I was down at Sarge, he said, there's another one at the market. But he said, we can't go today. Anyhow, I got the chance. The area commander was going to go around inspecting these people. So the senior said, always tend to me, what they would look like, eh? And they would, you know, you'd be giving them tips about this and that. And he said, you better get yourself down to San Shields and see that's all right. And we were just off the marketplace where there was a dockyard. And there were two wooden huts. And between the wooden huts, there was the cookhouse, which was out of the shelter. The weather was good, because it was still summer. And one of the older officers, a chap whom I never liked, he was of mixed blood, but anyhow, he didn't get up where he had some dirty habits, filthy habits, and he was looking up in this. Anyhow, he was in charge of this lot. So I went round the first hut, and so it's all right, you couldn't expect kids to be this and to just take right. You're going to be inspected. Just answer normally, whatever you're asked. But I said, for heaven's sake, get everything cleaned and tidied. I said, that shouldn't have their shirts hanging around. Right, they didn't have to. But I said, just, you know, take some pride and let's say it's all. I said, right after that, I said, well, to this fellow, I said, you're very open that it's a disgrace. You should. I didn't say this to the men. I said, you know, I said, they're old boys, but I said, you can be better than that. You know, this stuff was lying around. So he said, well, not very well looked up. He said, and I was going to go over there. I said, I'll send you out. And he said, well, before you do that, come see this cookhouse. And he had complained after complaining about the cookhouse. And I said, well, that's not my job. You should help take the quartermaster. Anyhow, I said, right, let's have a look at these other chaps. So I'm going round the other chap, the hut, and I'm chatting to him. Where's you in the other hut? He said, yes, sir. So I said, well, they'd all come from the other hut into this one because half of them had gone to their homes and were walking around the hut. So, anyhow.
He was a slack officer then. Were they old men, by the way, or young men? Yes, sorry, I just took
you. Okay, but this was it. You see, they were out of the desks, and they were there, just taking the money. All right, I was moved before they were born. But the first night...
So the young ones hadn't come in yet? No, they were going to
come in, and they came into Ravenswood Castle. The first ones I noticed were the members of the OTC from Durham School. Nice young men, right? Just their school leavers. And of course, they should have been automatically commissioned in normal circumstances, but with the war on and things haven't changed, they had to do further military, so they came down there for training. But I didn't have the weapons to train them, and I remember me telling them about the two-inch mortar to bury that, and I had to get a drain pipe with a piece of wood and putting a lace around it and say, well, this is the way the two-inch mortar went. But to keep them interested, there wasn't the equipment to interest them. But then people came in who'd been in France, and we started to get them sorted out, but at that time, I think I'd had my time there. And
how long were you with them? Because you went at back endish of July.
Yes, I was there almost a year, which I felt much like for me, I was home for it really wasn't good enough. But we were doing a job that they weren't going to do themselves until somebody came to replace us.
Do you think there'd have been an efficient fighting unit at all if some so of negligible military value?
Except there were soldiers with rifles looking after something just like a night watchman, you know, any intruders they should have spotted that were efficient enough. But they were there to keep an eye on things, but with people coming and going in a shipyard who had their own watchmen, they weren't as much value.
And what about the young lads who were training at the castle, or rather, the castle fields? Did they pass? How long would they stay with you before they passed on?
Well, I don't know, because I suppose I had them for 2 months.
So nobody actually went through the course with you then? So when did you leave? About a year, you said. Would that be June-ish, 41? April 41. And how did you come to move?
Well, Colonel Chapman, who was a little TA man in this town, commanded the 74th Field Regiment for years, first world man, and their army colonel. He used to always come see us at camp because we had a lot of others. But incidentally, the uncle of Dick Abbott, RVC, Colonel Dick Abbott's mother was Colonel Chapman's sister, and he lived up in the village. And he came, he had some job in the area, and he spotted me. Shelled for a while. I said that I had a job. I'd ask for one, and he said, "Oh, we'll do something about that." So I was moved to the 17th Battalion in Folkestone.
And that pleased you, did it?
Oh yes. I was with a proper battalion.
Because presumably you'd still have something to learn. Or would the 13th have filled in your gaps?
No, absolutely.
So it would have been important that you had some home battalion experience before you went overseas. What happened when you joined the 17th? What sort of an impact did they make on you after the 13th?
Well, first of all, they had just been inspected by Monty the day I arrived. Stood outside the great snow was there because there was a little bar around. So I arrived on the Saturday and reported, and the CEO, who was Colonel Morkill, ex Green House, very nice, he said, "Oh, we expected you yesterday." He said, "I don't know where we would have put you because you gathered it." I said, "I've fitted them so much, I'm not afraid of generals." So, anyhow, that evening, we had a good chat, and that evening he took me out to dinner with the adjutant who came from Newcastle, I didn't know. And we had a long chat, and we chatted mostly about what I would tell him about cadets. He said, "Well, what have you done so far?" And I said, "I can only tell him." So he said, "Oh, well, that's nice to have you." And of course, by the time I looked around, I knew about 10 of the officers who some had been adopted with me, and some had been in the East Yorkshire with me. I'm sorry if I'm fumbling
up. No, you're all right.
That's my memory.
So you felt at home right from the... He seems to have been extraordinarily welcoming.
Yes, he was. He took it out. And on the Monday, he took me out to a demonstration of in it, a surprise attack by parachute or something. It was a thing that was staged. And I went along with him, and he said, what do you think of that? I said, under the circumstances, it couldn't be much better. I said, you could have done it differently. I said, hardly anybody could. There were all officers who were watching. I said, the narrative wasn't good. And I said, whilst we have experienced, I said, these chaps can certainly swarm up from all over the place. And I said, that I don't think they should avert this. And so he said, will you do it for us? I said, we 2 days preparation. I have staged something similar for him.
Now, how had they done it? And how did you do it?
Well, they picked a very, Kent has these narrow lanes, and they had an armoured vehicle on the car. And they just ran it down this lane. Well, it was overlooked, and somebody put a roadblock at the other end. It was all a little bit theatrical. And I really didn't get any impact from the thing at all, because all right, we weren't immediately expecting the invasion at that stage in the past, but it was going to come probably sometime, and they should have had chaps who had been in France putting up a more realistic show. Here was a battalion that and other officers who were from other places, it wasn't just for this battalion, who hadn't had the experience, and I don't think they had the right people making the demonstration, because by the time these chaps who really came back from Dunkirk and came into the 13th, I spent a lot of time talking to them. I said, well, what sort of chance did you have? How would, well, the communications went for them. Most of these, of course, were new soldiers, and they said the communication was so terribly bad. We were told one thing and then got everything together, moving down and said, no, don't go that way, go here, something else there. And they said we didn't have a chance. It was just utter confusion. And they said, we didn't blame the officers, we understood it was coming from it, because things were happening so quickly, and they said, it was the civilians again. They blocked roads, we couldn't move, and frankly, it was disastrous for them.
Now, how did so you talk to people? Now, how did you go about setting? You only had 2 days to set up a demonstration. What did you do?
Well, I just had to. I got them all assembled, and I just sprang some surprises from people. It was again. I just wanted to get from the stereotype, stopping this thing and chucking grenades at it, which, and I think they had somebody fleeing, it was early fleeing, so I forgot what the name was, but some homemade thing went through a flame, and that had to get stopped.
So you just tried to make more of a surprise?
But you see, I hadn't actually been there. Mine was only to talking to people. But they said, these people you're sending going along the road, and there the enemy was, in command, and you thought you were going to join somebody else. So it was a surprise. And I think that was the lesson. I tried to be surprised, never be surprised about anything. And of course, Monty at that stage had just come to take over. And that was what he was preaching. Expect surprises. Don't have this stereotype linear defense. And he started what was building, still building, concrete blockhouses.
Pillboxes.
Building those. And linear defense along the south coast. He said, that's no good. He said, there are only going to be two places defended, properly defended, statically defended, and that was Dover and Folkestone, which was only 2 miles away. Now, it's a bit too early to go on to that, but because he'd come, this was his policy. And of course, at that time, he was getting rid of a lot of the old blood. He was, things rather tend to close down, sadly, last time, again. I wouldn't get my right to then, but closing down until Monday morning, not a great deal of period of the sports going on. And he said, finish all that. And he said, everybody must go for a 7 mile run on Saturday afternoon, even Brigadiers. He said, if everybody wants to be excused, I'll see them. And there was one colonel who got his doctor to certify, yes, he wasn't fit to do a 7 mile run. And he took us, told the story to Monty, this Monty from Bird. He said, I asked him, well, if you did this, would you die? This guy said, yes, I probably would. And he said, well, you'd better go somewhere else and die because you're no longer wanted here. And this fellow was sacked. And he did that, he went through, so everybody got afraid of the job, so you know, muscled in. And I saw quite a bit. I'll tell you a bit about that.
But the initial impact was quite big as far as you were concerned. That Monk, he made a real impact.
Oh, yes. He shook.
It wasn't just his later reputation and people.
Oh, no. He really shook them up.
So as far as you're, he built his reputation before he ever went to Africa.
Because, oh, yes. I hadn't been long. As I say, I was getting on with the CO of the 17th. And then they were asked to send somebody up to Brigade Headquarters. The 17th and the 14th Battalion, which was down there, they were in an independent brigade, 206 independent brigade.
206?
206 independent brigade. The South Staffs were in and another battalion, I can't remember, and they were to be the folks and fourths. Now, they were in private billets and hotels and things, but the 206 Independent Brigade was put in command of Brigadier Hawkshaw, who was placed there by Monty. He'd worked with Monty in France, and he was destined for promotion. He commanded the 1st East Surrey, but he was put into this position by Monty. And this is where I was sent, because by that time one officer had to go to Brigade Headquarters to represent his battalion and be the stooge and communicate and take messages if all other communication failed.
So a liaison man.
Yes, well, you were MC or more a contract officer. And I bought a brass rod with two yellow stripes and a blue MCO, so we were quite important. But this was the start of Monty saying, forget about communication that breaks down. You've got to have somebody who will be able to understand and take messages.
And MCO stood for?
Mortar contract officer. And there were four of us.
And how long had you been with the 17th before you got this job, roughly?
5 or 6 weeks.
Almost straight away then. Had you been given a company before you were sent up?
No.
So you'd been.
I was in a company with an older gentleman, again, First World War, a nice guy, Gilmore. And we were in the very barracks where the huts that I was with the artist's wife. And there was an exercise, a brigade exercise, organized. And from the gist of it, we were given the orders to go down probably in the order. I could say, oh, really, this is the exercise we used to do when I was in the artist's wife force. Of course, I knew the whole place and where everything was. And by the time I asked one or two questions, I thought, yes, the enemy's go through there, we go to the center. So I said, on this particular night, it was pouring cats and dogs and everything. and said, this who I was only platoon commander, I said, you know, we can save ourselves a lot of trouble and arrive at the start line if we pull our resources to the front. And I said, that's good. I said, only from the port, but I said, you can save yourself a full half hour's journey. And I took him a short cut. Well, unfortunately, the enemy had to send it before the time we walked straight into to them. So we captured the end before our time. I wasn't blamed for it, but the whole thing was a not it. But I knew the exercise backwards.
And you were a platoon company in Gilmore's
company?
A platoon company. What company was that? Do you remember? But we can look up Gilmore was your company officer.
Captain Gilmore, yes, he was nice.
And it was from there you were sent to the brigade headquarters.
Yes.
Now we might as well go on to that then. Where were you staying with the brigade headquarters?
Well, when I was with the 17th, I was at a bungalow in a place called Cable. When you come along from Dover, along the White Cliffs, and then at the bottom that drops, there's an escarpment that drops into a port from Armour. There's a pub on the corner, well, out in a bungalow, just, we were, you know, spread around, and the aerodrome was, you know, was just behind us, but we were spread around there. Anyhow, I was then sent to brigade headquarters, which was in Shawnkill Barracks, which were the same place where I had been with the Artist Rifles. So I knew that whole of that area, but at the far end, near Harney. And we had a really nice brigade headquarters. Given accommodation, it didn't have a particular, because I think it was the commandant's house at one time. But there were four of us from each battalion, and we had to know where the other battalions were, what they were doing, and communicate by word of mouth. So every morning we sat in at the CEO's conference and listen to what he was going to do, not everybody else. Now, not only did he command this independent brigade, but outside were the mobile divisions, of which 16th D and I belonged to one division. But they were not to be static, or like they were static while they were, but they had to be moved. So, but the 14th and 17th were in static defense divisions. So we naturally got round these other outside formations, and I got to know a lot of people and a lot of the countryside. The Brigadier used to pick on me quite a lot to go with him in his car, a big hunter, black line, and his boat carrier. So I got around and he went to the So. I didn't know the area, and I used to sit in on this conference. I didn't always go in because the others had to understudy the brigade major and the staff captain and the intelligence officer. You were supposed to be. But the brigadier took a yen to me.